DW Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Feel free to share this audio and tell us your views on the stories we are covering.
Coming up, the United States promises to continue supporting Africa in its fight against terrorism and jihadist groups. We hear from General Mark Hicks, in charge of Special Operations Command Africa.
We remain in an advise and assist role, and we have, over the last 18 months or so, increased our level of cooperation with our partner forces and host nations to conduct larger security operations.
General Hicks says they will go on to offer support to Cameroon in spite of earlier announcement. Could giving Africa a permanent seat at the UN Security Council be the solution to resolving security issues? We will also hear that from an expert.
As you know, the African continent is very heterogeneous. So you have English-speaking countries, you have French-speaking countries, you have Portuguese-speaking countries. So this is a very complicated question.
Plus, the latest news about the escalating tensions between neighbors India and Pakistan.
Stay tuned for these stories and more coming up shortly after the world news in brief.
DW News.
I'm Eunice Wanjiro with DW News. Senegal's President Macky Sall has been re-elected for a second term. Figures released by the National Vote Counting Commission show Sall won Sunday's first round outright, picking up more than 58% of the vote. His closest rival, former Prime Minister Idrissa Seck, won 21% of the votes cast. Seck went ahead to say that he would not appeal election results, showing a comfortable victory for President Sall. Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan said it will release a captured Indian pilot in a peace gesture, taking a step towards rapprochement as clashes between the nuclear-armed rivals ignited fears of a disastrous conflict. Khan made this announcement while addressing lawmakers in both chambers of parliament.
We are holding an Indian pilot in custody and we have decided to release him to India tomorrow as a peace gesture.
Meanwhile, thousands of air travelers worldwide were left stranded on Thursday after Pakistan closed its airspace in response to escalating tensions with India. DR Congo's health ministry says four confirmed Ebola patients are missing after an attack on Wednesday on a treatment center in the eastern city of Butembo. The attack was the second on a health clinic within a few days, the ministry said. Aid agencies and the government are battling to contain the virus in an area rife with militia groups and public distrust. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un have ended their highly anticipated summit in Vietnam with no agreement. The talks were aimed at agreeing on concrete measures for peace on the Korean Peninsula and build on positive sentiments expressed at their first historic summit. But Donald Trump said talks broke down after he refused to lift all sanctions against Pyongyang.
Basically, they wanted the sanctions lifted in their entirety, and we couldn't do that. They were willing to denuke a large portion of the areas that we wanted, but we couldn't give up all of the sanctions for that. So we continue to work, and we'll see, but we had to walk away from that particular suggestion. We had to walk away from that.
Thousands of supporters of Venezuela's embattled President Nicolas Maduro have taken to the streets of the capital, Caracas, to protest against threats of foreign military intervention in the crisis-ridden nation. Opposition efforts to bring in humanitarian aid have been thwarted by the army. And finally, a UN probe has concluded that Israel violated human rights and may have committed war crimes in its response to last year's protests in Gaza. The inquiry said snipers targeted people clearly identifiable as children, health workers, and journalists. Israel immediately rejected the findings, calling them hostile, deceitful, and biased. For more news and information, visit our website. That's dw.com. I'm Eunice Wanjiro.
And this is Africa Link coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. A warm welcome to you listening to us on our Facebook page now, DW Africa. Vincent Pasai says he's watching from Oron, Nigeria. And we have a Bagina Guru who says we are together. Machumi Mtemi says he's listening all the way from Bayer City in Tanzania. Keep it here and give us your feedback on these stories.
Now, we begin with this breaking news. Senegalese President Macky Sall has won a second term without the need for a runoff. That's according to the Electoral Commission. And Senegal's opposition parties, all of them, said they will not appeal the decision or the outcome of the vote. Now, the United States has said it will continue to support Africa in the fight against terrorism and extremist groups, despite the fact that their presence has not hindered the Islamist militant attacks in the past year. The U.S. government has over 7,000 personnel in Africa.
According to Major General Mark Hicks, the commander of U.S. Special Operations in Africa, they will once again offer support to Cameroon despite the recent announcement they were cutting military aid due to the cases of human rights violations. My colleague Fred Muvunyi spoke to General Hicks, who starts by explaining the dangerous jihadist groups pose.
Al-Shabaab in Somalia is certainly a challenge for the government of Somalia, both the federal member states and the federal government of Somalia, which poses a challenge for U.S. and international assistance to Somalia. Boko Haram and ISIS West Africa, the Barnawi faction. We also have the Al-Qaeda-backed JNIM and ISIS GS here that pose problems both for Niger and Burkina Faso as well. And really trans-regionally across the Sahel here as a problem for certainly northern Mali, which is in very difficult shape right now.
A few months ago, Boko Haram attacked U.S. forces in Niger, and there were some challenges and talk about the U.S. forces and how you are unable to tackle terrorists in Africa because of the nature of terrorism. What have you done as a commander to change the way the U.S. forces operate in Africa?
Well, first, we've not received any attacks from Boko Haram recently against U.S. forces. Our partner forces have been engaged with Boko Haram, but we remain in an advise and assist role, and we have, over the last 18 months or so, increased our level of cooperation with our partner forces and host nations by advising at a higher level. So instead of a small unit, a tactical unit, we are advising at the battalion level and above, and trying to continue to mentor larger groups to conduct larger security operations.
Human rights abuses in Cameroon have pushed the U.S. government to announce that they are going to stop or reduce the military support that they have been providing. What can you tell us about that?
You know, we still have partnerships with the Cameroonian military that have been very effective. They've been very good partners, and we will continue those relationships for some time.
They are also committing human rights abuses. There are, for example, allegations that they are killing people in the Anglophone region.
Well, we certainly take very seriously any allegations of human rights violations by any of our partner militaries or security forces. And we expect those allegations to be investigated and appropriate action to be taken against any of those who conduct human rights violations.
Mark Hicks, the commander of U.S. Special Operations in Africa, speaking to our own Fred Muvunyi, who is on the ground.
Still talking on security issues in Africa, German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas has called for reforms of the UN Security Council to give Africa a permanent seat responsible for peacekeeping operations and conflict resolution.
Maas, currently on a four-day tour of West Africa, was speaking at the UN military camp in Gao, Mali. He told German troops to prepare for long deployment since the peace process between the government and rebel groups has been repeatedly thwarted by terrorists.
We know that this is a dangerous mission. That is why it's important for us that the soldiers' security is taken into consideration and the fact that they have adequate and right equipment, which is something we are having a closer look at here. But we are here to help forge peace and implement the peace treaty. Although it's a dangerous mission, we are well positioned here. There is good cooperation with other countries that have also sent their soldiers here. That is why I remain confident that we can achieve lasting peace in Mali and that the citizens can take responsibility and the fate of their country into their own hands at some point. We can achieve this, and that is why this mission is worthwhile.
Dass wir das erreichen können, und dafür lohnt sich dieser Einsatz auch.
The question of Africa getting a permanent seat at the UN Security Council has always remained unresolved. Thomas Schiller, the head of the Konrad Adenauer Stiftung, a German think tank, says the decision on Africa's representation on the Security Council remains a contentious issue until now.
You know, the Security Council question is always a very tricky one because, as you know, the African continent is very heterogeneous. So you have English-speaking countries, you have French-speaking countries, you have Portuguese-speaking countries, even Spanish-speaking countries or Arabic countries. So this is a very complicated question. And the question of a permanent seat for an African country is on the table since many, many years. And a lot of Africans claim that. But it's also very important to see that this is not an easy way to do, because which country will represent Africa?
That is Thomas Schiller from the think tank organization Konrad Adenauer Stiftung. Feel free also to give us your views. What do you think about Africa getting a permanent seat at the UN Security Council? But now we go to other stories making headlines globally. The crisis between nuclear-armed neighbors Pakistan and India has raised fears of an all-out war. The situation has escalated since the capture of Indian Air Force pilot Abnidan Vardhaman by Pakistani forces.
Although Pakistan has promised to release the pilot tomorrow, the Indian military chief maintains that his country remains on high alert following the recent escalations with the neighbors. Sylvia Frolich has more.
Hundreds of Indian protesters in the northern part of the country took to the streets to demand the release of the Air Force pilot captured by Pakistan. The pilot, identified as Wing Commander Abhinandan, has become the face of the latest flare-up following the release of videos showing him being captured and later held in custody. Residents of Kashmir are calling on an end to the crisis.
I think the atmosphere of war that is ongoing is going to bring destruction for both countries. It will be good if both countries talk together and resolve the Kashmir issue. War only brings destruction.
As a Commonwealth Kashmiri, we can say war is not, we are not achieving anything from this war. They should come forward all across the line. They should sit together. They should issue this Kashmir issue amicably with the consent of Kashmiri people.
DW spoke to Pakistan's ambassador to Germany, Jauhar Salem, who maintains they want a peaceful coexistence with their neighbors.
Pakistan has been facing terrorism to a much greater degree than India has. You know, the number of deaths that we have faced in the last 10 years, we're talking about 70,000 people. So, like, does that mean that we should just go and attack India? Because, you know, you cannot just accuse somebody and then sort of, you know, we have asked, and our Prime Minister has been very clear on that. We said they should provide actionable evidence.
India's Prime Minister says his country's enemies are conspiring to create instability through terror attacks. The two countries have fought three wars since independence from British colonial rule in 1947, two over contested Kashmir.
Zilia Frolich with that report on the escalations between India and Pakistan. Now to another story that is coming in right now and is developing pretty fast. Senegalese President Macky Sall has won a second term without the need for a run-up or runoff, according to electoral officials. The four opposition candidates said they would not pursue a legal challenge, ending days of uncertainty in this democracy long known for its peaceful transitions of power. Now, Zippy, unlike Nigeria, the opposition party said, no, we're not going to challenge, you know, the outcome of the election.
Yeah, and I can see all the talk is like, is Senegal the role model for other countries, because the observers were satisfied and the opposition is happy as well. Perhaps this is like an example to other countries. It is possible. I don't know how
it was. Yeah, sure. Because, you know, this is the way to go. Opposition candidates should learn how to accept defeat and move forward. So Senegal has set this example because all the four opposition leaders who contested for the top job said they're not going to challenge the outcome of the election. You can take us to this debate by going to our Facebook page, DW Africa. And in case you're just joining us, you're listening to DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. A warm welcome to all of you listening to us from all corners of Africa. Tell us what you think, because we have a lot lined up for you in this second half.
Indeed. Coming up in the second half, like you said, Zippy, dealing with depression. We'll be hearing how two young women in Zambia are dealing with this mental disorder.
There were issues of staying alone without anyone near you, someone who could support you financially.
Make sure you stick around and hear that trending topic now about depression in Africa. But now we first head somewhere else, and Diamond Rich Botswana has offered to lend Zimbabwe nearly $600 million to help ease its economic crisis.
The loan will be offered to Zimbabwe's private sector and the diamond industry. A short while ago, before we came on air, I spoke to a correspondent in Harare, Privilege Mishanri, about this latest development. Take a listen.
The Botswana president was in the country for a two-day visit. He confirmed that his country has extended a credit facility to the amount of 1 billion pula, which has been welcomed by Zimbabwe, struggling to get foreign currency and even credit lines to revive the economy. During the session, Mokwetsi Masisi confirmed, here is what he said.
We agreed to a loan for the credit facility. We increased it from 500 million to 1 billion, and the details of which will be sorted out later on.
That was Botswana President Mokwetsi Masisi. Now, Privilege, this development is quite interesting because relations between the two countries in the past have been quite frosty, especially under President Robert Mugabe. How can you describe the current relations between the two countries?
Since the coming in of President Emmerson Mnangagwa into power, it seems as if the relations are warming up, and also with the coming in of the new president, Masisi, in Botswana, these seem to be warming up. First, Emmerson was in Botswana in 2018, and this now we have seen Mokwetsi coming to Harare for this biannual commission where they have signed a number of agreements.
I was speaking to Privilege Mushanri in Harare. A Bible and a whip taken from Namibia by German colonizers has been officially this Thursday been placed in the National Archives, despite complaints that the items are not going to the proper tribe.
The Nama Traditional Leaders Association had argued that the Namibian government should not be the recipient of the items, which once belonged to the country's national hero, Hendrik Witbooi.
Witbooi belonged to the Nama clan, which has argued that its interests were not represented in the case that saw the return of both the Bible and the whip. DW's Daniel Pels has been closely following this development, and he spoke to Lazarus Kairabab, the Secretary General of the Nama Traditional Leaders Association, on the dispute over the return of the Witbooi Bible and the whip to Namibian authorities.
We were informed that this is a state-to-state exchange, and since Yemen is only dealing on a bilateral level with national governments, and therefore it's a state-to-state. So we have no understanding what exactly is the meaning thereof in relation to the material itself, the items itself, knowing that these are items that belongs to individual who, if it was part of the household estate, would have ended in the hands of the church or maybe in the family, and the family would have decided what to do with that.
Where's the problem with the Namibian government receiving the Bible and the whip? Doesn't the Namibian government represent all Namibians?
In this case, I think if one takes the international understanding of the rights of minorities are, we have an issue in terms of our history where we think that the materials of our history in Namibia is not treated. Even up to now, there's very little of that history of genocide in the Namibian curriculum, in the Namibian schools and stuff of that nature. There's a lot of the recent history incorporated in our schools and the like, but that history has been suffocated for so long, and that's the reason why we wanted to know already. There's a discussion in Namibia going on about that history, why it's neglected.
Are you going to demand returns of more objects from Germany?
Yes, there are. There's not only the Bible. There's so many other things that we heard about, 1,000 other objects and items that are still held in Germany. But now we don't even know what is the effect of the separation from the rest of the other items, how it will reflect in the process because of the position of Germany and Namibia, which they have agreed, which we also don't know what exactly that agreement, because we don't know what is the content of the agreement under which these things are repatriated. We have no understanding, no knowledge of it.
Lazarus Karibab, Secretary General of the NAMMA Tradition Leaders Association. And we have very many interesting comments.
Yes, Isaac, you are right. And I have to start with the first one here, which I love, from Etat Major. And he's saying, yes, they keep sending Africans only the Bible to read. Is this the only thing they took when leaving Africa? And he goes on to say, what about the books they collected from Egypt?
Samuel Ezofo says, sometimes I wonder if the of Western countries like Britain, Germany, Portugal, France, Belgium, Spain, and Italy have the moral authority to preach doing things right to Africa and call us third world countries, considering their past activities, which have continued through their companies and serving us a safe haven for stolen wealth.
Wow. And our Sir Daniel, yes, for sure. There's another one here from our Sir Daniel who is saying, they returned the Bible. What of the golds and the diamonds stolen?
Mm-hmm. Vuga Elvis says, give what you took. Bible, what more of other valuable bronze masks that were taken and are in British museums? When will these ones be returned to? I should say, even somewhere that elder mentioned that, you know, they returned the Bible and they went, but thousands of Namibian artifacts remain in German museums across the country.
That is a challenge for sure. And there's another one, also interesting one, and someone is actually saying that Chijioke Ejima says the original one is still hiding in Stuttgart Museum. Very skeptical.
And I mean, Gola Kunyez from Cameroon, as usual, when we have a story, Cameroonians come up with their comments also. He says, bring back the ones you collected from Cameroon. Many thanks for those comments, and keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
U-Zone.
Now, depression is a common mental disorder worldwide. According to the United Nations, an estimated 300 million suffer from depression, the majority being women.
In sub-Saharan Africa, countries like Zambia, cases of depression are on the rise. However, psychological care for patients with depression is lacking due to shortages of professional psychologists or counselors. Stigma is also rife. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka.
The University Teaching Hospital in Lusaka, Zambia's biggest referral hospital, records more than 34% of all emergency cases as self-harm, such as attempted suicide. Such cases among young people are related to depression. The country's only mental health hospital, Chinama Hills, built in the 1960s, cannot cope with the increasing cases of depression as it only has a bed capacity of 50. Natasha Kombe, a 22-year-old student, is one of the many patients who was discharged from the hospital after suffering from depression. She attempted suicide after she lost her mother.
After her death, there were issues of staying alone without anyone near you, someone who could support you financially, and also, and sometimes someone who could just help you out in terms of how you think and how you would take life, especially when your parents have passed away. I thought dying was a better thing then because I never had where to go. Where do I start from?
People with depression may experience a lack of interest and pleasure in daily activities, significant weight loss or gain, insomnia, or excessive sleeping, and lack of energy. Other symptoms of depression are the inability to concentrate, feelings of worthlessness, or excessive guilt, and recurrent thoughts of death or suicide. 15-year-old Natasha Kazile also suffered from depression several times, as she explains.
Depression in my life has been caused by the loss of my loved one.
I loved my aunt so great and dearly, and when she passed away, I wasn't able to cope with the emotions. I held them in, and not until a month later did I really feel the effect of her passing away. I was really depressed. I was sad. I felt hopelessness. It caused a suicidal feeling, and I wasn't able to sleep and eat. I'm also a child of divorced parents, and it affects me.
Lisa Thompson is a psychologist working with young people in Zambia. She tells me the various factors that cause depression among the youth.
They can often get depressed, and it can have to do with family background, it can have to do with the economy, with the availability of jobs in the country, with a sense of hope or hopelessness. Do we have hope for our future as youth in our country? Do we not have hope for our future? So there are many factors that can lead to youth depression.
Recently, the Ministry of Health announced that it intends to pass a bill in Parliament to protect the rights of people with mental health challenges, as well as build more mental health facilities and train more specialized staff to deal with rising depression in the country.
Kathy Short with that report.
Speaking out. Now, Tanzania has suspended a leading newspaper and its website for a week, accusing it of falsely reporting currency exchange rates that are not correct. The action against the Citizen newspaper follows growing complaints by opposition supporters and civil society groups at what they say are moves to stifle dissent and create obstacles for journalists and rights.
President John Magufuli earned respect by fighting corruption after winning election in 2015, but criticism by opposition is growing at what they say are crackdown on human rights. My colleague here, Isaac Mugabe, has been speaking to Angela Quittle, Africa Program Coordinator with the Committee for the Protection of Journalists, on the suspension of the newspaper.
It does not come as a surprise, because the Committee to Protect Journalists has been tracking what we see as several repressive measures against the press under the government of President John Magufuli. And in fact, the latest shutdown of the newspaper appears to be related to the Controversial Statistics Act, which actually bans any publication from publishing any statistical information that is contrary to official figures.
You were once jailed by Tanzanian authorities, in particular the immigration, in what it said was violating the terms of your visa by holding meetings with local journalists. How closely is your organization then working to develop the media in Tanzania after your experience with the authorities there?
Well, the reason why we were in Tanzania was because of our concern, and we had tracked the deterioration of the media freedom environment in Tanzania. And if anything, what happened to myself and my colleague from the Committee to Protect Journalists, we were detained overnight and interrogated. That is absolutely nothing compared to what journalists are facing in Tanzania day in and day out. We have journalists who have disappeared. We have journalists who've been arrested, journalists who are facing sedition charges. We have newspapers that are being shut down. We have bloggers who are no longer able to blog because of online regulations that are incredibly onerous. So the situation there is dire. And our concern is that ultimately the people who suffer are not the journalists. When we talk about media freedom, we're actually talking about more than just whether journalists can publish or broadcast. It really is about the citizens' right to know.
That was Angela Quittle, Africa Program Coordinator at the Committee for the Protection of Journalists. Many thanks for giving us company. And until tomorrow, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
Bye for now.
for Minds.